hello once again to all my ghoulies and goblins out there this week. I hope you're enjoying our October Spookathon because I'm having the very best time hearing people's tales of the inexplicable. This week is no exception. My guest, Norman B., has quite a tale to tell. And to kind of introduce you to who my illustrious guest is, I'm going to read from his Wikipedia page. Norman Battley is a radio personality who's hosted and programmed award-winning shows for stations in the United Kingdom, Seattle, Washington, and Tampa, Florida. He has a fabulous podcast called Life Elsewhere, which is heard on pretty much every platform that you could ever imagine. He also produces and hosts Life Elsewhere Music, which is a weekly show of new music that features conversations with noted figures in the music industry. Thank you, Wikipedia. I'm sure, as you'll hear, Norman has the most perfect voice in the entire world. And I was so grateful to my friend Maggie Hanley for bringing us together. Norman's generosity of spirit and his sense of humor shines through in this episode. And his tale? Well, let me just say it gave me goosebumps. So now, episode 140 of Bite-Sized Blessings. Who are you as a human being? If you had to go to a conference or a party and introduce yourself, describe who you are, what makes you tick, how do you self-describe?
Oh, gosh, what a question. A shy introvert, a forlorn, unhappy alien from another. No, I'm completely joking. I'm totally joking. Totally. Honestly, I would sooner let somebody else describe who they think I am and what I am. I mean, I'm a performer. I'm an entertainer, you know, so I've done this for years. So it's very hard sort of coming out of being the person that you see either on the radio or on TV or on, you know, on video. I mean, I don't know how to answer that question. I really don't. Who am I? I don't know. A complicated, mixed up kid, you know, in an old man's body. So So that's who I am. Yeah.
Well, here's a question. Did you, when you were a kid, did you have any hints that this would be the vocation you went into?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I wanted to be a graphic designer, which is what I became. I became an art director, and I somehow along the line, I got into the broadcasting business. But I'd always along with wanting to be a graphic designer, and this is an absolutely true story. I used to sit at the kitchen table and a wooden table in the kitchen whilst my mother was cooking or whatever. And this is when I was like 8, 9, 10. And I asked my mother if I could borrow a wooden spoon, you know, like you stir food with, you know, and she had an old one that was burnt at the one end of it. So she said, "Hey, you can have this. You can do whatever." She said, "What do you want it for?" I said, "Oh, I'll show you." And I had a tennis ball that I cut in half and I put it on top of the burnt handle of the spoon. And to me, it looked like what I thought a microphone looked like, which in actual fact, kind of did. So I would sit at the kitchen table with my wooden spoon microphone and pretend I was on the radio. And I would tell stories and I would interview people, but it would be me I'd be talking to. I mean, I'm one of those kids, or I was one of those, I still am, that I could conjure up imaginary people very, very easily. So I would basically talk to myself, which I still do, of course, and create radio shows for myself. I mean, it went on for God knows how long. And my mother didn't ever say to me, "I think you're absolutely nuts. We need to get you seen to, you know, take you and get you analyzed." Because back in those days, because we're talking about the 18th century right now, back in those days, you didn't really, you know, talk about people's, you know, mental state. They were either nuts or they weren't. And so I think my mother just excused me as being sort of, you know, I just had a fanciful imagination. So yeah, I did. I did want to do what I do, and I'm glad I did.
That's wonderful. When I was a kid, my mother accidentally showed me her stack of 45s.
Yeah.
And I had an old record player that she also showed me. So I pretended to be a DJ.
Ah.
And I got to hear all of those great songs, you know, Life Could Be a Dream.
Oh, yeah.
Da 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 da. I mean, it was so fun pretending to be a DJ at like 10, but with these records. So there was a lag time. And then my mom said, are you actually playing those? And then she took them away. She's like, you're going to destroy these. And I thought, fair enough. Yeah. But yeah. I can tell, I mean, I'm just listening to, you have the perfect voice. You have these gorgeous dulcet tones. I just kind of want to listen to you into infinity. But you have an, you have an accent too. So are you from England?
No, I'm from Texas. I'm from a little town outside of Fort Worth called Scrubbins, where everybody talks like this. I'm completely making that up. Totally making that up. Yes. Yes. I'm from London, the UK. And the very weird thing is that when I go back home, people say I've got an American accent, which, of course, is absolutely nuts. But I do find myself saying things like garage and sidewalk. And, you know, I use the colloquialisms now because I've lived here for a long time. There's been many attempts to throw me out of the country, of course, but they haven't managed to do it yet. So I'm still here. Yeah.
I just want to fangirl on England for just a second, because after I walked the Camino in 2013. Uh-huh. And after I finished, I took the ferry from Santander and spent 3 weeks in Cornwall. And uh-huh. I have to tell you, I went to Bude, Mare of Zion, Newquay. But the funniest story was, when I was getting off the ferry, there was this giant border guard who was really terrifying looking. I mean, I've never seen anyone that big. And he said, you know, he's looking at my passport and he said, where are you going? What are you doing? And I said, I'm going to Newquay. And he just started laughing and laughing. And he said, you're totally getting in. He's like, but don't ever say that again. This is how you say it. Newquay. So I learned something.
Yes.
And that part of the world is so gorgeous.
It is.
And just
is.
Astonishing. I had no idea. And by the way, everyone who lives there that I met, wonderful human beings, just so kind and wonderful.
It's one of my favorite parts of the country. I love the UK, England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales. There's so many wonderful places. The West Country, Cornwall and Devon, I know very, very well. Spent a lot of time there when I was much younger. And you're right, lovely places. I mean, the vistas, the views and the landscape it's awesome. It really is, in the truest sense.
I actually spent several days in Tintagel, and I had not grasped yet the fact that you could just walk through farmers' fields and you would climb up these like gates over styles. These fences, the styles of, I mean, it's really so insanely charming there and green and just wild and beautiful. I can't wait to go back. It's such an astonishing place.
Go back and explore the Yorkshire Dales. Go to Yorkshire, go to the city of York, which is in a beautiful cathedral city. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And then go to the Yorkshire Dales. It's spectacular. I mean, it's like, it's like something out of a movie of, you know, like Jane Eyre or you know, it's gorgeous stuff. It really is. Yeah.
So do you spend much time in the States, or are you half and half, or?
No. I've lived here now full time for years and years and years. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And you can always go back when you wanna. So I'm so curious, what was your favorite gig you've ever had? Like gig, broadcasting like gig.
Broadcasting. Oh, yeah. Cool. What I do now is I interview people that I do my own show, and which goes out to different stations and podcasts. So really what I do now is my favorite, because I choose who I'm going to talk to. It's people that I want to talk to. And I've interviewed I love interviewing people. So I've interviewed, you name it, I've interviewed them over the years, you know? So, you know, my all-time favorite interview, couple of interviews, was with David Bowie, you know? But there's been lots and lots over the years. I mean, there's authors that I just adore that I've interviewed and have incredible conversations with, which have turned into friendships. Scientists that I've interviewed, politicians that I've interviewed. All kinds of people. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to pin down a favorite. What I do now is a big favorite. But over the years, I mean, when I got into radio and to TV, just the thrill of it. It's always a thrill. Every show is an audition for the next show. It's a rehearsal. Everything really is preparing yourself for the next one. Because I, as you can hear, I tend to sort of babble on, you know, sometimes I don't know if I'm making any sense. I mean, I just sort of keep on, you know, babbling. And sometimes I just feel like I need to just sort of, you know, put a sock in it, shut up, let somebody else speak, you know? So.
First of all, I'm not hearing any babbling. So just to let you know.
And then, you're too kind. You're too kind.
And then secondly, I would say, you know, kind of in my mind, an interview with David Bowie would be pretty high up there. You know, I would have loved to have, I love science. I've loved science since I was a kid. And so, you know, I have fantasies of talking to all sorts of scientists on this podcast, but my like unicorn for an interview would have been Stephen Hawking.
Oh, okay. Yes. I didn't interview him, but I've got a favorite right now that you might want to look up. And his name is Augustine Fuentes, and he's an anthropologist and probably one of the most remarkable men I've ever spent time with. We've become friends over the years. I've interviewed him. Well, I don't call it interviews. I call it conversations. I've had conversations with Augustine a number of times. If you want to hear, go to my website and just look up Augustine Fuentes. I mean, he's such an interesting man, and he's just got a wonderful, gentle charm, which I just adore. Yeah.
I'm so intrigued. Did you grow up in a religious household at all?
No.
Okay.
No, my family was very Catholic in the true sense of the word, in that we went to church on high days and holidays purely for the rigmarole, if you like, for the splendor of the choir and the sort of all the grand gestures. But at the same time, we went to, my father was very interested in all kinds of religions, even though he didn't follow any religion. So we would go to a synagogue quite frequently just to listen to the prayers, because my dad said it was very, and I agree, he's gone now, but he used to say that it was so fascinating to hear how the rabbis would read the Torah but then at the same time, I mean, where we lived in London, there were churches, there were synagogues, there were mosques, there was a Hindu temple, there was a Buddhist temple not too far from where I lived. So I had, growing up, I experienced pretty much all of them, but I never followed any religion, never. And I studied religion, for what we call A-levels before you go off to college in the UK. And I studied, I did what they call religious instruction, and I did that and passed that. And that was fascinating learning about, I've always been fascinated, because it's partly history and it's partly, I mean, there's all kinds of things, religion, but I've never followed any religion. Yeah.
I have often said that growing, I mean, I lived in Pakistan for 4 years and that ruined me forever, because as a kid in Guyana in South America before that, as a kid, if you see, I just saw so much of the world, but then also being woken up every morning or awakened every morning by the call to prayer. And I mean, it's just such a beautiful way. It's a beautiful alarm clock. It's better than what's going on my phone right now.
Yeah.
But it kind of informs your life for the rest of your life. And what a huge gift, but it also opens your eyes to a lot of things that other people aren't, don't get the gift of seeing, I guess.
Yes.
Haven't been given the privilege of seeing.
Yes.
And then, you know, we traveled all over the world besides that, because you have to go to places to get to places. And I've just seen so much and I've loved every minute, but it does come with, you know, some knowledge that is both heavy and also freeing at the same time. If we're going to get deep, I'm getting deep here, getting a little deep, but,
Not at all. No, go for it. Go wherever you want to go. I mean, you're the one in control here. So do whatever you want.
Well, I just love that you grew up in this kind of this neighborhood or this enclave or this area where there were so many different religious institutions. I mean, what a feast for the senses.
Absolutely.
And for the curious or those who want to explore more or dive in, because I think curiosity is, I mean, it is bread and butter for me in this world. I can't get enough of learning everything that I can possibly get my hands on. But as a kid, just being surrounded by all that knowledge and those faiths, and kudos to your dad for taking you in just to listen to the rabbis.
Absolutely. Well, you know, for me, see, I grew up thinking it was normal to be around people of different cultures, different faiths, different races. You know, I mean, I didn't know. I had no idea that until I came to America, that discovered that there were people of one race didn't mix with people of another race. And I found that, it was like, what? I thought that was something you read about. You know, I thought that was something that didn't actually exist. I didn't know that there was such a thing as, you know, real ghettos. Now, I have to say, things have changed in the UK and in Europe overall, but I still think there is a difference to the way things are, the way things have grown or developed in the USA. And I'm not knocking it by any means. I understand a lot of why and all the rest of it. But I didn't grow up in that. See, I grew up like my next door neighbors from Jamaica. The people that lived upstairs were from Trinidad. People, I think, like two doors down were from Czechoslovakia. I mean, just a complete, you know, a total mishmash of people and cultures and the smells, the foods that were being cooked, you know, and the voices and the, you know, just wonderful stuff, you know? Yeah.
It's so funny. When I graduated from high school, my dad took me on a 3-week trip and I went to college at University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. And so, you know, all the girls are going off to like Tahiti or wherever, you know? Yeah. And they said, where are you going? And I said, oh, Bangkok and Bangladesh. That's where I went for my graduation present from high school, which was normal for me and I loved it, but was a weird answer for everybody else.
So,
I mean, we're going to talk about kind of this experience or experiences that you've had, and I'm so intrigued. Do you think that, you know, this kind of beautifully engaged approach with so many different religions or belief systems, do you think any of that came into play with how you interpreted this experience that we're going to talk about in just a few minutes?
It's so funny that you say that, because I do think that it allowed me to be accepting. Mm. Does that make sense? It allowed me, because I have to say, before I get into the story, I'm like ghosts and whatever. It's like, come on. That's just like, you know, but there was part of me that had always said and still does, I'll believe it when I see it. So I'm kind of accepting, you know, of things. And my experience, as you'll hear, was quite profound. And, you know, it's interesting because I haven't spoken about it very much, but I'm really pleased to be able to talk about it. I'm going to start it off by telling you, it was, and I don't know the actual year, I've forgotten, but it was the summer of the late 90s. And my then girlfriend and I decided to take a week off and to explore Montana because I was living in Seattle at the time. And so early one evening, we arrived in the historic town of Livingston, which is an old Western town in Montana. And we happened to stop downtown right across from the Livingston Hotel. And on the other side of the street was the railway station, the Livingston Railway Station. Well, now, this was, you got to understand, this was in the days before grand old hotels had been made over into boutique hotels, you know, with rustic, you know, the walls still rustic and wood and the iron and whatever, you know, accompanied by minimalist modern furniture and lounge music in the foyer. This hadn't happened yet. I mean, this was a genuinely, it wasn't necessarily run down, but I don't think it had a good clean for ages. It was almost like entering a cave. I mean, there was ornate woodwork everywhere, oversized, unlit chandeliers. There was, it had a sort of a very distinctive musty smell. And of course, no one was around to greet us. I mean, it was like walking onto a stage set. And we kind of felt like we just, you know, we were part of a performance, except where was the orchestra? Where was the audience? And where was anybody else? Anyway, as if out of nowhere, out of the gloom, came this figure. And I'm not exaggerating when I say there was this sort of shadowy, dark figure that sort of just like almost floated towards us. And it was a little disturbing, but not so much that we really took that much notice of it, other than here we were in Montana, in an old hotel, and, you know, it was kind of, yeah, this is normal, really. Anyway, this woman appears and she comes up to us, and this is what was really strange. Everything she said was like a question, and every question she said was like a statement, which was really odd. Really, imagine that. So she said. I think, I mean, I'm just trying to remember exactly, but she said something like, "Welcome," like as if it was a question. What, not, you know, like, "Welcome." It was like, "Welcome." and we said we were wanting a room for the night. And so she said, "A room for the night," like a statement. Okay. She talked about a number of things about what she had. And she said, "Oh, you know what's going to be really good for you," as a question, "it is Alice's room." And we're like, okay, you know. So she took us up. Oh, she took us up in a cranky elevator, one of those old-fashioned metal elevators that's all open. You know, the kind of cage elevator that's all open with sort of ornate ironwork, and it sort of rattled and shaked and cracked. You know, it was creaky and like metal rubbing against metal as we went up, and it was really slow. We went up, I think, 4 floors. I could have run up and down those stairs at least 6 times by the time it took us to get up in the elevator. I mean, it was that ridiculous. Anyway, we go into this rickety old elevator that's making all these squeaking and clunking noises, and we get up to the 4th floor. And interestingly enough, the gloom and doom of the foyer sort of as we got to the 4th floor, it was kind of lighter. I'm not going to say it was brilliantly light, but it had that old fashioned like flox flowery wallpaper, you know, and it was kind of all ornate but really faded. And she takes us, we walk down the corridor, and there's a huge door, a massive, great big wooden, like oak door. And it was, she said, "This is Alice's room." And out of nowhere, I didn't hear her rattle them or anything, but just like as if like from out of her sleeve, she had this huge key with a pink ribbon attached to it. And she, I'm serious, and she opened it, clunk, and she opened the door, and the door, of course, creaks and squeaks. It was like, and she says, "This is Alice's room," as a question. And it was the corner room, and it had windows on both sides. And I hope I'm not giving you too much detail here. Windows on, and it was tall. The ceiling was I don't know, very high, and had curtains, drapes on all the windows, and they were like velvety and went right down to the fact they sort of folded onto the floor. You know, it was really lovely. It was very sumptuous, but very old. And as I said, the windows were on two sides of the room, and the room overlooked on one side to the railway station, which was, I thought, was kind of cute because it was an old railway station. And the furniture was oversized sort of brocade armchairs with big fluffy cushions with all kinds of stitching and handiwork on them. I mean, very ornate. And the bed, and my girlfriend at the time said, "I'm going to need a ladder to get into that," because the bed was like, you know, like 5 feet off the ground. It seemed like it was so high just to get onto the mattress. Anyway, as we're sort of just looking around the room, so the woman's name, she told us her name was Madge. So Madge said, and you got to understand everything she's saying, unless it was an actual, everything she said was a question, unless she was asking a question, which was a statement. So imagine that. So she said, "Oh, I should just let you know, this is Alice's room, and this was Alice's favorite room." And as she sort of turned into leave, she said, "Oh, by the way, if Alice does come to visit you, don't worry about it, because she's very harmless. She only visits people that she feels comfortable with." So we're like, okay, well, you know, we didn't even take it seriously. We didn't even think it was, I don't know, I don't think it registered at the time. It was kind of like, well, that's a bit odd, but okay, let's, you know, okay. So we settled in, we freshened up, and we walked around the corner. We found, this is weird, we found an Italian restaurant that had a Western theme. So everything was in sort of, everything was in cowboy motifs everywhere, but it was an Italian restaurant, and it actually was really quite good. And I remember this distinctly. The waitress, somehow she knew that we were staying at the Livingston Hotel, and she said, "Oh, welcome to Livingston. I guess you're staying at the Livingston." And we said, "Yeah." She said, "Oh, are you in Lucy's room?" And we're like, "What?" And we had a great meal, and we had a couple of very nice cocktails and bottle of wine, and yeah, we had a nice time. And I'm not going to say we staggered back to the hotel, but we were in a nice merry mood, and we got back to the hotel, and the hotel, of course, was incredibly dark, as it had been earlier on when we arrived late afternoon. And we made our way up. We walked up the stairs. We both of us decided we just didn't want to be trapped in that cranky old elevator for the night. So we walked up to the room, and, you know, we brushed our teeth, washed our faces, and got into bed. And I mean, we think we were kind of tired. It had been a long drive that day, and we just had a nice meal and cocktails. And so I think we went and toddled off to sleep fairly quickly. Well, I'm going to say it was round about 3 o'clock, and I don't hold me to that, because it could have been 3:30, or I mean, it could have been 3:45. I don't know, but it was around about 3 o'clock, and something woke me up. And as I woke up, my girlfriend woke up at the same time. We both sat up, and we both, in the gloom and doom of the room, we looked at one another, and she said to me, "Do you feel that?" And I said, "Do you feel that?" And we felt like a sort of a, it was almost like a breeze. It was almost like we sensed something in the room. It was like it wasn't wind, but it was almost like something was sort of flapping. You know, like if you wave a fan, you get a little bit of air flapping in, you know, it felt like that. It was like air was sort of coming towards us. And then as we're both looking at one another, and I didn't want to say to her, to my girlfriend, oh God, I'm a little scared. And I don't think she wanted to say to me, but I have to say, we both sort of gripped one another's hands and we're both sort of sitting up in bed with this breeze. It wasn't a breeze, it was a feeling. And then all of a sudden, I mean, I swear this is exactly the way it happened. It was, we heard this. And it went on like that. It was like this. And this breeze, this feeling just kept coming at us. I looked at her, she looked at me, and we both looked in the direction of what we felt and what we heard. And I swear, there was this, and I'm not going to say it was a person so much. It wasn't a silhouette. It wasn't, you couldn't see. It was so weird. It was like, it felt like there was a figure standing there, sort of kind of swaying, kind of moving, but you couldn't discern. You couldn't see any features. You couldn't make out what, but it was a figure standing there and it was moving sort of gently, not robustly, kind of gently. There was this kind of feeling, this energy, a sort of a very slight breeze, and then this laugh, and this laugh just kept going on, and it was like and it got louder and louder, and we were now both holding one another. We're both like, oh my God, are we seeing, is this a ghost? We're both like questioning, is this a ghost? And then as we're like that, holding on to one another, boom, nothing. It went, it disappeared. The breeze stopped, the laughing stopped, and the image, the visage went, it disappeared. And just as that happened, the train came trundling down the railway track, and it kind of vibrated as it went by. The room kind of, like the window panes on the windows kind of rattled a little bit, and then it went, and it disappeared down the railway track. And I swear, we sat in bed for maybe an hour, just, you know, going, what the did we just experience? What in the world was that? I don't know if we ever did get back to sleep, but the next morning we decided we got to ask Madge, the woman at that took us to the room. We questions that we couldn't even formulate. So we went downstairs and decided we'd get some breakfast. And on the way to do this, Madge again appears out of the gloom, and we say to her. And I remember this. We both said it sort of in unison. We kind of think maybe we met Alice last night. And so Madge goes, oh, how was she? Did she stay long? And we're like, well, we don't. Well, we were kind of speechless. And so my girlfriend said, well, she laughed. Oh, and so Madge goes, oh, well, that's great. She wasn't crying then. So, like, no, she was laughing. She was like, she said, oh, that's really good. She must have liked you, and she must have been in a good mood. And then she started to tell us that Madge was the mistress of Mr. Livingston, who the town was named after, and he had built the hotel. And some tragedy had happened, and I may have got this a bit wrong. I'm not sure whether she killed the Mr. Livingston or he killed her. I can't remember, which I should remember, I guess. But anyway, somebody had died, and somebody wasn't happy about the death and whatever. And Madge says that Alice would come back to, and she promised that she would haunt the place, and I don't know whether she just added that in or whatever. So that's just, she tells us this, and then my girlfriend says yeah, she said she was gone as the train came past, you know, the train, the late train came past. And Madge, there was silence, and Madge stopped for a moment and she stared at us and she said, train? The Livingston station has been closed for over 20 years. That is my story of my experience with a ghost.
Drops the mic and walks away.
Yes.
Wow. So if Madge, who I kind of love this vision of her emerging out of the gloom.
Yeah.
And she's almost levitating. I love that. Yeah. So, I mean, if Madge would have told you and disclosed that potentially you might have an encounter in Alice's room, would you have taken her up on it?
Well, we see, she did kind of indicate that Madge would come, but we thought she was kind of joking. We thought it was a kind of like a bit, you know, it was like, oh, here's Madge, here's Alice's room. She didn't say anything about murder or ghosts or whatever, but we just kind of like, oh, Alice, yeah, of course, Alice's room. And she might come and say hello and she'll, you know, whatever. So yeah, I think, yes, because we didn't really weren't thinking in terms of a ghost. We weren't even terms of thinking of anything sort of paranormal or anything. I mean, we were just like, we were on just a little, you know, adventurous trip, you know, to Montana and, you know, willing to accept a lot, I guess. So.
I commend you for staying in the room after, because that laughter, I'm sorry. I don't care if she's in a good mood. That laughter is just, and the fact that it went on and on and on, I would have probably peed on myself and then run away. So
well, I have to tell you, that I made it sound like it went on forever and ever. It must have gone on for quite some time because we sat there for quite some time. And here's the funny thing. It didn't feel scary. It felt weird, but it didn't feel scary. I mean, it wasn't like, I think that's why we both sat there for so long and kind of like looked at one another, held one another. In some respects, I'm not going to say enjoying it or embracing it, but at the same time, kind of like wanting to understand, wanting to explore it, I think mentally, but I don't know that we consciously did that, you know?
I just think you're so brave. I don't know if I would have not. I'm a scaredy cat. I got goosebumps. Want to tell you, I got goosebumps while you were telling that story. And then the train at the end, which is like the cherry on the top of that story.
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed. So this is the kind of experience that one has that changes one's life forever. Did it do that for you?
Yes, it made me, I think I said earlier, it made me accepting of ghosts, of ghost stories. I mean, I once again, I wasn't scared. Nor was my girlfriend. We were taken aback. Yes, we were both kind of like, well, this is weird. But we both agreed, and we talked about it. As you can imagine, we talked about it a lot afterwards. But neither of us felt frightened or scared or in peril. We didn't. I'm not going to say we felt safe either, but we didn't. We certainly didn't feel like this was anything to be frightened of. It wasn't frightening. It wasn't, you know, even though that kind of, in some respects, well, I mean, you know, a visage coming towards you out of nowhere, and a laugh that was sort of cackling away, and a sort of a breeze coming at you, and then a train that's there that's not there, was, you know, really is kind of, you know, makes you kind of go, what am I, did I drink too much last night, you know? But here's the thing, if I had been on my own, I think that I would have questioned whether I was dreaming and I just woke up in a dream, because I have wonderful dreams. I have incredible dreams. In fact, I don't like waking up sometimes because I'm in a dream and my dream, and I want to collect all those pieces of the dream and I never can. As you wake up, your dream sort of like breaks up, you know? And this was one of those times where if I had been on my own, I think I would have put it down to a dream. Although having said that, this was so real, and I was awake, you know, I woke up and I was there, but I had I had my girlfriend right next, and we were both doing exactly the same thing. That was what was really, really disconcerting. It wasn't scary, but it was like, oh my God, we're both experiencing this at the same time. So yeah, Alice was there.
That's it, another tale of terror in our October Spookathon, or as I've been calling it, our Spooktacular. I've been so gratified and so surprised by the many people who have experienced things that they can't explain, and by the many people who are willing to share their stories. So thank you, Norman, for taking time out of your busy schedule and for being so generous of heart that you gave me an interview, someone that you absolutely did not know. I also need to thank Maggie Hanley for bringing us together. She's been such a staunch supporter of the podcast and such an incredible connector of guests for me. I can never say enough to thank her, quite honestly. I hope you're all getting into the mood because October is quickly coming to an end. I see it all around me with the leaves that are changing colors, with the pumpkins that are starting to decorate everyone's front porches, and with the general chill in the air. You can tell that winter is coming. I'd like to ask everyone at this point who listens, please do consider writing a review or leaving a rating wherever you find the podcast. Podcasters like Norman and I, we live for those ratings and those reviews because they help other people find us. So please do consider doing either. I need to thank the creators of the music used for this episode, Frank Schroeder. For complete attribution, please see the Bite-Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to all sorts of groovy things, including to Norman's podcast on the Treasures page of the website. And then underneath the episode show notes, there will be a link to his Wikipedia page if you want to dive more deeply into this fascinating human being. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Norman. Be so very cool when you wake up the next morning and you find out that the train that you heard going by your window does not in fact exist, has not existed for decades. And that breeze you felt in your room and that maniacal laughter that you heard in your room the night before, oh, it was just a ghost. Be so very chill and so very cool, knowing that you're getting a glimpse of the other side of the veil.